This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Tom Bias, CEO of the American Carbon Alliance. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. Learn how Syngenta is working alongside growers and farmers to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm at Syngenta-US.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with ACA's Tom Bias next. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. At Syngenta, we talk to U.S. farmers and growers every day to hear their concerns and help them meet their challenges. From research and development to create innovative products to digital solutions to reduce water use and create healthy soil, we work hand in hand with America's men and women who feed and power the world. Our highly skilled teams are at the forefront of connecting technology with the oldest profession to utilize mobile apps, aerial imagery, and other advances to enable farmers and growers to make smart application and buying decisions for their farms. When the American farmer has a successful crop, we all benefit. And Syngenta is proud to work alongside the grower and farmer to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm. Learn more about Syngenta and our support of the U.S. farmer online at Syngenta-US.com. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Growth in renewable fuels has yielded both commodity demand and better revenue for the nation's farmers. The industry has brought both jobs and revenue to rural America, all the while providing domestic energy security and providing fuel that's better for the environment. But Tom Bias, CEO of the American Carbon Alliance, says the industry won't realize its full potential unless it can lower its carbon score, and that means pipelines.
In any type of commodity production, you have to have demand, and demand needs to be a little greater than the supply if you want to make a profit. You know, I started out farming in Indiana and farmed 20 years full-time before going to Washington. In most of those years, we sold our crops at below the cost of production and had to count on government assistance to make up for it until the ethanol industry came along and we got a consistent domestic demand that drove prices upward where people could get a price from the marketplace, a profitable price from the marketplace, as opposed to having waiting on the farm bill or disaster assistance or economic disaster. All those things that we went through. I saw carbon capture and sequestration as the key to lower our carbon index score for ethanol and allow it to become a feedstock for next generation biofuels or next generation fuels like sustainable aviation fuel, which are huge markets. And that creates demand. That creates profitability, not just for corn, not just for ethanol, but the whole rural economy.
So what's the relationship that you see between the use of renewable fuel and carbon capture, both from an environmental aspect and also from a rural economy farm income aspect?
I think they're so linked because if we don't lower that carbon index, well, we've already seen it. We've got three states on the Pacific Coast that have low carbon fuel standards that biofuels have to meet. You have countries adopting standards. If you talk to any of the foreign buyers, one of the big criticisms of ethanol is it's not low carbon. And if you go back to the early days of growth energy, we got into a legal struggle with the state of California because they collared us with a indirect land use charge that drove our carbon index above what was considered to be sustainable. And we've been fighting that all these years to try to get rid of that ridiculous, not factually based indirect land use charge, which made ethanol a higher carbon index. And so here's a mechanism where you can cut the carbon index of ethanol in half if you capture the carbon and sequester it. And, you know, there's a couple of bold visionary people and entities that went out there and started proposing to do that. You have to be able to do it, though, in the areas of the country where the geology allows you to capture and store it. And so for those people who weren't in those areas, it was necessary to ship it to the storage areas. And to do that, the most efficient way is carbon, to ship the carbon is pipelines. And, you know, some people would thought the sky was falling because when you mentioned a carbon pipeline, but there's already 3 million miles pipeline in this country. It's the most efficient way to transfer fuel or any other commodity. It's the safest way to transfer stuff. But all those facts didn't enter into that early debate, and that's why we were formed, and that's why we went out there to try to explain that.
So what industry trends, political fronts, or environmental efforts have prompted the alliance development and have zeroed in your directives?
Well, I think the fact that you've got sustainable aviation fuel that's coming on the market is one thing that's driving it. I think the low-carbon fuel standards throughout this nation and the world are driving it. Also, the competition's driving it. If we don't capture these markets, somebody's going to. They're existing markets. They're not pie in the sky. There's already demand out there. And, you know, like any commodity you produce it for the demand. I don't care if it's exports of corn to China or wherever. You have to produce for the markets. And that's what it's all about. It's market-driven. And does it help the environment? Most environmental community has long said that carbon had to be reduced or stopped in some manner. And there's two ways to do it. You can either capture it after it's produced, which is what's happening here, or you can quit producing it. Quit producing it is very costly and going to take a lot longer.
So we're saying it's critical for those pipelines in order to be able to grow the renewable fuel industry, to keep both revenue from carbon and revenue from renewable fuel moving forward.
Absolutely. Okay, if you look at the geology of the country, you're basically looking at areas between Illinois and North Dakota. Both states can store it safely. And east of Illinois, some states can. Obviously, west of North Dakota, they can't. There's probably 70 ethanol plants, maybe a few more, 90, that exist in between those two regions. And for them, that pipeline is absolutely necessary to be able to capture the carbon and lower their carbon index. And if you look at an ethanol plant, and people say, well, why the ethanol industry? Well, number one, the only thing that goes up the smokestack of an ethanol plant is carbon. It's easy to capture. It's easy to process. And with a pipeline, it's easy to ship to areas where we can store it forever. A lot of polluting manufacturing plants, et cetera, what goes up their smokestack is more than carbon. So it's more expensive, more involved to be able to separate it, the carbon from the other pollutants, and be able to store it. The Summit Pipeline is the largest carbon sequestration project in the United States. I think part of the criticism, Jeff, I know part of the criticism, is by people who do not want to see fossil fuel environmental impact be lowered ever. They just want to get rid of it. And that's part of the debate. They want EVs or nothing. And while EVs may have a role in some areas, they're not the perfect solution. And we know that if you had a low carbon index ethanol and combined with some other factors, you can get down to zero at an ethanol plant. When you start doing combined power and heat sources that are more environmentally sustainable. So the future is great for this industry and for rural America. But the question is, are we going to play a role in it? Or are we going to let this opportunity go by? You know, I'll add one other kind of anecdote. When I was growing up, a big issue was in our community was they were building the interstate highway system. And everyone in the community was all upset. But, you know, it was national security and the reasons that they built the interstate system. And there was nothing to do to stop it. But all the people in our community fought really hard to make sure they didn't put an interchange in there in our community. And we won that battle, or they won that battle. But guess what? They put one 6 miles down the road. It's flourishing today. We ended up losing all our businesses and our schools because if you weren't on the interstate highway system, the economic opportunities drop drastically. And the same's going to happen here if we're going to let the opportunity for these markets bypass us. We'll get left behind.
Am I wrong to summarize by saying that unless we get those pipelines, renewable energy won't be able to grow and we will have lost that segment?
I think we will. This is a huge opportunity. And the pipelines are just no different than the highways or the railroads. They're a means of transportation. It's safe. The pipelines are safe. They're efficient. And they serve as that conduit between what goes on with the ethanol industry and those farmers out there. And they're absolutely necessary.
Tom, in this last week, the White House received several thousand signatures from farmers, and their issue was the EPA's tailpipe emission standard, which basically sets a mark of zero emissions for electric vehicles and greatly reduces the number of piston engines using liquid fuel that would be available from vehicle manufacturers. What is the American Carbon Alliance thought about this regulatory push?
Anytime you're trying to address any problem, you shouldn't limit it to one solution. And the administration definitely has limited everything regarding automobile emissions to the EV route. We know, and as I just mentioned a minute ago, Jeff, we know that we can be low carbon fuel. And so there shouldn't be a one direction. It should be all of the above, and whoever can do it and do it the most efficiently. And we think in biofuels and the internal combustion engine, that continue to happen, and we continue to lower that environmental impact and overall better for the economy. EVs have significant challenges, and we know that we can address our challenges. So let us play a part. Don't pick an overall winner. Let everybody compete.
The Treasury Department will use an amended version of the GREET model to determine federal support. That March announcement is pending. What could those changes mean?
Well, depending on what they do, it's going to depend upon our carbon score. And so those changes could mean a lot. We're certainly hoping they're closer to the original GREET model than any possible increases in that carbon index and that carbon score, because the GREET model has been more extensive in the data and the studying of what it takes to come out with a carbon index. It's updated. It's modern. It takes in all kinds of factors. We think it's the best, and certainly in encouraging the Treasury Department to stick with the GREET model. Otherwise, the consequences could be severe for rural America.
Tom, the Economic Research Service offering data this past week suggesting farm income down $40 billion from last year, and that follows a $27 billion drop between 22 and 23. What urgency, or does that create an urgency for revenue from carbon capture or renewable fuel, or both?
If you look at the commodity markets, and we've seen this coming for a while, demand is not keeping up with the supply. Every acre of corn produced today, people's yields keep going up. The same in the ethanol industry. The efficiencies at the plant continue to advance, and the market is not growing. So, because every new vehicle somebody buys, it gets better mileage than the previous one. So that lowers the demand for fuel overall. Every EV that's purchased eliminates the fuel for that segment, for that vehicle, going forward. And we've been kind of stymied in our efforts to get higher blends throughout the market throughout the year. And those challenges still exist. We hope to get that all addressed. But capturing carbon is the single best thing to drive demand. And you got corn prices right now below cost of production, Jeff. And, you know, I think we started out this conversation on why we got involved in what we were doing at American Carbon Alliance and what was driving it. It's that. You got to have demand to create a profitable price in the marketplace. And we're in a situation right now where net farm income is dropping, but the cost of production is headed in the wrong, or the net from the cost of production is headed in the wrong way. We have to change that. We have to address it. I don't think anyone wants to go back to the days where we have to rely on the federal government for our income. American farmers are the best at what they do, and they're best at producing. And I think it behooves us all to figure out how we have markets that have demand that drives up that profitability.
Corn-based ethanol went from using just a few million bushels to 5 billion bushels a year. So what opportunity does developing sustainable aviation fuel, what does that mean to farmers in rural America?
Well, there's already a mandate to produce 3 billion gallons of sustainable aviation fuel by 2030. That's a market that certainly a lot of people are looking at, and a lot of there's a lot of interest and announcements of people who are building sustainable aviation fuel plants. And if you're going to need a feedstock though for it, and right now most of the feedstock, you know, comes from fats and oils, etc. And there's just not a big enough amount of that feedstock to meet the challenges ahead for producing sustainable aviation fuel. And again, you're not going to electrify an airplane. So they're going to have an alternative fuel. And corn-based ethanol can be that feedstock. We have competition. We'll have competition from sugarcane-based ethanol in South America. It's not like we don't have competition, because we do. But we think we are the most efficient, and if we get this low carbon index, we'll be the feedstock.
Iowa Renewable Fuels recently announced a study that if a sustainable aviation fuel market were to develop, it would boost employment by over 220,000 jobs. Labor income would grow over $9 billion, and there'd be $427 million more for farm revenue in ethanol plant basis premiums alone. Those are significant numbers. But, Tom, on the opposite side, what happens if you're not able to sequester that carbon and you're not able to build those sustainable aviation fuel plants? What happens if we do nothing here?
Well, I think what's going to happen is as more and more demands for low carbon index, you're going to have to be able to produce it if you want to be in the fuel market. And there's no reason that everybody in the biofuels market can't participate in that. There's other options. If you're not along that, you know, we talk a lot about this area of the pipeline, which is five states. But there's states outside of that where I know plants have filed for permits to pump it straight into the ground. I know ethanol plants in North Dakota already do that. I know Kansas, there's ethanol plants that already pipe it to expired oil wells to for enhanced oil recovery. There's a lot of options. Illinois, there's efforts ongoing there, both by plants, same with Indiana. So I think every ethanol plant is going to be able to participate in some manner, and I see nothing but extremely beneficial markets from it.
The partners of the Carbon Alliance include Renewable Fuels Association, Growth Energy, American Coalition for Ethanol, a number of farm groups, Landmark, and you're also working with POET. What do these partnerships and the alliance mean and to your voice for the industry?
Jeff, when we set this up, we set up as an alliance. We didn't want to set up a separate organization to compete with any existing organizations. We just wanted to align with everyone and everyone have a single unified common voice out there in support of capturing carbon and sequestering it. And so far, I think we've achieved that. We have a number of farm organizations. We have all the biofuels groups on board. We have companies on board. Honeywell, which is a non-agriculture major player in the sustainable aviation fuel, they just joined on as members. So what we're trying to do is create enough voices out there that we get that message out there about this opportunity and how good it is for the economy, for the environment, and for our nation as a whole.
Should energy policy and carbon capture be a significant issue in the race for the White House and control of Congress between here and November?
Well, I think any of these issues are going to be discussed at the presidential level and presidential campaigns, congressional campaigns. I think it's important. It's very important. And we hope that these issues aren't partisan issues, because the beneficiaries of all of this belong to all different kinds of parties. So, and overall, it's the benefit to America. You know, we could, if you let the EVs of the world and the Chinas of the world, which control the battery, most of the materials that go into batteries and stuff, I don't think anyone wants us to swap our dependence on Middle Eastern energy for dependence in China or any other country. I think as a nation, this is really valuable that we proceed.
Well, Tom Bias, you have a long history of service to agriculture, not only being a farmer, but also working for the Farmers Union, Growth Energy, and now the American Carbon Alliance. Thank you for your service to the industry. And Tom, we glad to have you on this edition of Open Mic. It is Open Mic, and today Tom Bias has the last word.
Well, thanks, Jeff. I think if anyone wants to take away anything from this conversation, is that providing an economic opportunity for rural America is invaluable. A profitability in agriculture, but also for our nation. We want to make sure that we're strong, we're in control of our energy production, and in rural America, we can be a part of it, and I think it's going to be beneficial to everyone.
Our thanks to Tom Bias, CEO of the American Carbon Alliance, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Syngenta, a global leader in seeds and crop protection products. Syngenta is working alongside growers and farmers to make the best decisions for now and the future of their farm. Learn more at syngenta-us.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.